Okay. Welcome back. And we have a lot of wonderful people listening all around the world. Many of you, not a lot necessarily, but many, have been severely injured by this hideous bioweapon, which is designed to do one thing. It is not experimental. It is doing extremely well at what it was designed to do, and that's to kill and maim human beings. Many of you are in pain right now. You don't know what to do. You're at your wit's end. If not, you're literally your entire constitution. You're out of gas. You're tired of trying to fight something that no doctor can help with. There's no prescription, no pills. Nothing's going to make any real difference because you have been harmed gravely, and you have our 100%, 200% support and sympathy. A lot of you are now suffering from being unvaxxed and shed upon, and you don't know it. Some of you do. You newcomers will probably learn a lot. But we're here for one reason, and that's to try to help with information that many people won't touch, don't even know about, and is important. And that's what we're about. Are you there, partner?
I am, Jeff.
That's
Happy
Erica.
Friday.
She's back again for another dose.
I haven't left.
She can't stay away. So anyhow, all of you people out there who are suffering, it is horrible for you. We know that. We talk about it often. It's truly terrible. And I only wish pine needle tea would help. But there's no detoxing this. It's a genetic weapon. It is the most diabolically evil biological weapon I can even imagine. And I have a fairly good imagination. This thing has, as we've said for, we're in 3 years now, so many different ways of ending life. It's not funny. This thing is absolutely astonishing in its diversity, its sophistication, and its multi-layered attack on human beings. It is really unbelievable, this thing. And we just hear more and more. Now, that little tone you heard was Erica's low, well, I guess it would be, was it the big city? That was the main
fire. That's the big city,
right?
Yeah, okay. That's the big one.
So that's it. Another paramedic call, in all likelihood. And she gets calls, and she monitors them, listens to them, and a lot of falls. And you'd think, okay, somebody fell down. Well, in most cases, people get the hell back up. And I'm wondering, these falls, if they're being sustained in many cases by people who actually pass out, when you pass out and become dead weight, and you hit the floor or whatever, you can do serious damage. But most people who fall aren't going to call for paramedic assistance. They're going to get up, or someone's going to help them up. And it's so things are happening out there that are very dire for a lot of people. We have a lot of things for you tonight. We have a lot of readers to do. Let me just start out with one and mention as a prelude to this that it has been said now by more than a few people that it is not inarguable that everyone who has taken a biologically active shot or shots has in fact become a victim of myocarditis. Subclinically, they don't feel anything, but they have been damaged nonetheless. Or they have been damaged so severely that life is hardly worth living. And we have several up here, and I'm going to read the first one, and Erica's going to come in with the next couple or three. This is another real sad one. There's so many of these out there. All right. Myocarditis and pericarditis after COVID vaccine support group. That's where this is from. Hello, my fellow warriors. Today marks 2 years to the date I received the vaccine. Today is hard, very hard. I am extremely emotional. I am still dealing with the same pains and even more issues 2 years later. Today, I feel defeated. Also like I have no more emotions or energy to give in this fight. I feel so tired, so drained, and pained. The only reason why I am still standing is because of my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. My heart is broken, I am broken, and I mourn myself and the life I once had every day. God, I miss me. Crying as I typed this, Lord, please tell me this isn't what the rest of my life looks like. I never knew how strong I was and am, honestly, but I'm tired of being strong. Sometimes I pray and I say, God, if you can't heal right now, can I please have a break? Please. Just one day, O Lord. Asking him that as I wipe my tears off of my face now. Sometimes I feel I'm living a tortured life and ask myself, what did I do to ever deserve this? I know justice is coming for us all one day. I just know it. Lord, I pray that it's sooner rather than later. I love all of you in this group, and I pray every night that one day we may all find peace. Your fellow warrior, and we'll delete her name. But that's just one example. And you think about 6 billion people approximately who have been injected now? Let's say 5 billion of them have gotten good, competent bioweapon injections, and they have all got pericarditis. And keep in mind that it is commonly projected now that people with pericarditis from these shots have about 5 years. That's it. People in general, if they take these shots, have a 15 to 25 year decrease in life expectancy. And it may be worse than that. We're watching and we're reporting, and it is not easy. Go ahead with the next one.
This is also from this myocarditis, pericarditis injury group. Is there anyone here going through this all alone like I am? I have no parents and no spouse. So I am really struggling to get through this. First answer, I have been. I live alone. Mom and my sister live interstate. I have relied on a girlfriend a lot. It is tough. Many nights you are not sure if you will even wake up tomorrow. I've also cried a lot alone. Please message me if you would like some support.
May I say something here? Hold that next one. Here's what I want to make again as a point. This is to be kept in mind. When you're out and about shopping, whatever you're doing, and you see other people walking around, you just heard two descriptions of people who are out there walking around. They can still get out, many of them, and walk around. You won't be able to tell by looking at them. You're often looking at people who are grievously injured. They're still ambulatory and suffering, and they cry every night, and they're alone, and you can't define misery much worse than that. Please go ahead.
Another one says, I'm scared most nights that I won't wake up in the morning. And first one says, it's horrible, isn't it? Yes. A third one says, I have felt the same way many times, and I have shared that with family members who just have no clue. Even when I say that it still feels like they have just no clue of what I'm going through. And to that, someone says, I don't think most people have any idea what we are going through. To suddenly have our lives turned upside down, and then to be ghosted by the medical professionals is unimaginable to most, let alone frequently thinking we are having a heart attack or stroke. Hang in there.
Do remember that the myo and peri group, especially the myo sufferers, often have severe chest pains around their heart.
Unending.
Not nonstop. You can't sleep with that. We've heard stories about that too.
Yeah.
These are the chronicles of the people who are suffering so much that at some point many of them are going to give up. And I don't blame them. They're just going to check out one way or the other. You can't do that to a living, sentient being and expect them to survive it for forever. It's not going to happen. Go ahead.
Someone else says, you are most welcome to private message me if you want an adoptive nan. My 18-year-old granddaughter has had this since November last year.
See?
I'm here if you need me. My name is Lee, and I live in Rotorua, New Zealand. And someone asked Lee, how is she coping? And her reply is, Tyla teaches me lessons every day. She has struggled both mentally and physically through this. She was a lifeguard at our local aquatics, so she was super fit. She worked out at a gym daily and is now unable to work. Any exercise sends her heart rate up, and she struggles daily with pain, breathlessness. Reckons she has someone sitting on her chest all day. She tries to keep active, though has to rest constantly. She deliberately motivates herself and keeps planning for a future without this. She's about to start working with an occupational therapist and physiotherapist to put a back to fitness and work plan in place. She has also just picked up her studies again. I don't know how or where she gathers her strength from. I suspect her koros, who have passed, are helping her through this. She takes every knockdown in her stride. She has her dark moments, but she talks with us about them. It's me and her mom that are struggling to cope with the trauma of it all. And he responds to Lee, man, what have they done to us? It is a crime. Struggling with this every day sucks. And Lee says to him, I still believe that it was a necessary thing to do, though. We have all been vaccinated in our family, and Tyla, unfortunately, was unlucky. I'm hoping that they will research you all to try to find a common denominator in the cell makeup or your DNA to give us some answers as to why. You know, it's putting the blame on the victim.
it's so incredibly backwards.
And yes, it does suck, and I feel incredibly guilty every day that this has happened to her and to others.
There are so many lives that have been destroyed by this. Remember, you've got to remember, this is an attack on human beings. Nothing less. It is an attack and a destruction of humankind. All right, the last one we have. I feel alone too, says someone. I can read doubt and misunderstanding in all my family's eyes. It's the most hurtful thing. Totally agreed. I think that's the hardest part, especially when they have had zero reaction to the vax, and it's almost like a distrustful look or a look of non-belief. See, the injured are seeing this a lot. Just because someone around them has gotten a shot and hasn't yet been knocked down or damaged, they look at them as if they're making it up. That's even worse. It cuts to the bone, and it tears my heart out. I've cried and cried to my significant other, asking if he believes me. If it wasn't for him and the one girlfriend, my sister has a vax injury, I would have nobody. Because my family members look glazed over when I tell them, especially at times when I was a few months post-vax and I was frightened that I would not wake up in the morning. That's a common theme. Many of these people just feel as if their heart's going to stop overnight. And unfortunately, that happens to a hell of a lot of people. They just don't wake up. And we've explained why and how that works in past programs. You shouldn't go through this alone. Feel free to message me anytime, writes someone named Joy. Someone answers Joy and says, yes, me too. I'm here. So sorry to hear about what you're going through, adds another. This is a Facebook page called, or there is a Facebook page called Homeopathy for Post Cookie Syndrome, post-vax. They have over 5,000 people on there, trained homeopaths. homeopaths, very approachable. Hope you feel better soon. Next person says, that's really tough. More than anything, you need psychological support at this time. Final entry, I have quite the opposite. A brother who knows the vax can injure, but yet shove me in the chest and say, myocarditis is mild. So this guy's brother is just discounting what his own brother's telling him about his agony.
Yeah, the way these people have been treated, it's deplorable.
Well, it's not human. We're supposed to be better than this, and we're not. It's just not working.
I mean, they're made to feel like there's something wrong with them.
For complaining, yep, you're making it up, I'm fine. Well, these people
Yeah, I mean, there's something
fine.
Wrong with you genetically, why you couldn't withstand this. What's wrong with you?
Right.
Never mind that it's barbaric and completely unnatural. Never mind unnecessary.
The people who think they're fine are in for a rude awakening. It'll just take a little longer in some cases, but they're all suffering from amyloid formations, prion formations. God only, you know how long the list is. I'm not going to go through it. This thing is really hideous.
We're starting to see, in fact, most recently, are people coming into these groups now, myocarditis, that it's been several months since their last vaccine injection. And I mean, I'm saying 6 or 7 months, and they're coming down with myocarditis months after the last vaccine.
Well, they're noticing it months after. They may have gotten it a few days afterward, but it's subclinical. Please, when you hear the term experimental, don't buy it. Don't even think about it. Don't let that word even register. This is not an experiment. It's a deployed military weapon. Period.
Yeah.
End of story.
I mean, it has done nothing to curtail the spread of the virus. If anything, it's enhanced its spread and fitness.
100% right. Okay. So God bless all of you out there, vaxxed and unvaxxed. And we're here to try to help. And we don't get it all right, but we're on top of 90%+ of it. That's for sure. And we're doing our best to keep you up to speed. We did spend some time on this vax being injected into cattle and pigs last program and into crops and so forth. There are other issues with crops as well. Set up this Mercola thing and we'll play that if you want.
We should just mention that the McCullough piece there, Peter McCullough.
You want to do that? We can do that.
Yeah, it's real short. I mean, he commented on a study published by the Chinese where they put mRNA into cow's milk. They loaded it onto some phospholipids, phospholipid-based exosomes. So they took a short strand of mRNA or RNA, loaded it onto some phospholipid exosomes, put it into cow's milk, fed it to mice. The mice actually took up the mRNA from the intestinal tract and they actually translated it into a protein and developed antibodies against it. Hmm. So there's proof of concept that it can be done.
Here, let me read it real quick and you can go back and elaborate a little bit more if you want. The nation's food supply can be manipulated by public health agencies to influence population outcomes. All right, we all know that. A great example is fortification of cereal grains with folic acid, the synthetic form of folate, which successfully reduced the incidence of neural tube defects, such as spina bifida. Now an oral route of transmission is being considered specifically for COVID-19 vaccination, COVID-19 bioweapon, using the mRNA in cow's milk. Zhang, this is the paper, one of the authors of the paper, Zhang and colleagues have demonstrated that a shortened mRNA code of 675 base pairs could be loaded into phospholipid packets called exosomes derived from milk, and then, using that same milk, be fed to mice, as Erica said. The mice gastrointestinal tract absorbed the exosomes, and the mRNA must have made it into the bloodstream and lymphatic tissue because antibodies were produced in fed mice against SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. So there you go. That's just a little rehash of what Erica said. This, I don't know if this is an earth-turning event, but what does this mean in short to us?
Well, as I said, it's proof of concept. I mean, they've shown that it can be done.
That's all we need. Yeah, got it.
You know, I'd be more concerned about milk than I would about meat at this point because, you know, if you're thinking about injecting livestock with mRNA that's going to cause the livestock to produce a protein, you know, by the time that gets to your dinner table, first of all, the mRNA wouldn't make it. The protein might make it. But, you know, if your goal is to genetically alter the person eating something, I wouldn't do it through a piece of beef necessarily.
Right.
But, they're going crazy now with genetic engineering. And so this video that this Dr. Mercola did, I think it was in the last week or so, it's about 14 minutes. And he talks about just what they're doing in general, not necessarily the vaccines, but the way they're genetically modifying all kinds of foods now and the dangers that are inherent with that. I mean, none of this is natural. We are not equipped to deal with some of these changes that they're going to be foisting on us if we choose to eat their food.
Everything's synthetic and GMO'd now.
To the point where apparently whatever refuse is generated from these processes has to be disposed of in a safe way. They can't just toss it into the environment like you could compost or anything. It's an environmental hazard. So this is the stuff we're going to be eating?
I urge all of you, consider buying local as much as you can.
Yeah, know your farmer.
Consider turning toward a vegetarian diet as much as you can. Local produce is relatively easy to find. Most every town has farmers markets. So when you're buying packaged processed foods, you're buying trouble, big trouble. It'll catch up with you. Okay. Here's Dr. Joseph Mercola, and I have not heard this, so let's listen together.
Well, it is great to be with you, but I'm disappointed that I wasn't able to participate live. I've had to explore purchasing some land for a health community we're looking at developing and had to do some international travel. So, you know, I apologize not being there live with you. But the reason that I'm doing this is we know that there's an impending crisis coming with the Great Reset. And food is going to be a real issue. It's always an issue, but it's going to become even more so. Now, the globalists that are catalyzing this Great Reset, they have had a monopoly on food for a long time, and their intention is to make that even grow and become more so. And they started this process with the GMO seeds, and of course, the primary purpose of a GMO seed is to facilitate the integration and the use of glyphosate, a very potent, deadly herbicide that Dr. Stephanie Stennis, who is on this panel, is explored in great detail and has actually written a book on it. So I was one of the people early on who helped educate individuals, you know, 12, 15 years ago, because at that time, virtually no one knew the dangers of GMO seeds. and glyphosate. And it's really, to understand what's coming, it's important to have an understanding of what happened the last century. And that is the food industry, and Monsanto specifically, was an effective lobbyist in changing the laws to essentially allow GMO foods to be substantially equivalent to real food that we were all, historically have always used. And the reason this is important, because if this is in place, then what they've done is essentially bypass the whole necessary and required infrastructure to do safety testing, because in many ways this is so similar to the tobacco industry. You know, it's a pernicious, pervasive toxin that doesn't kill you immediately; it kills you slowly over time. So they got the legislative requirements in place last century, and now they're taking it forward. And I'm going to tell you exactly what they're doing, because what they have in store for every one of us is an equally serious health threat, because they're going to produce synthetic food, fake food. And they're going to make loads of cash on it, because the predicted market for this fake food market, $3 trillion. And there's even a report by the consulting firm McKinsey, which is a very big consulting firm. They're calling it the bio revolution, or synthetic bio, or SynBio, as it's frequently called it. And they're predicting, McKinsey, that 60% of all the materials in the economy can be produced this way, especially the food you eat. And what type of food might that be? Well, we know what it is. It's fake meat, fake milk, and fat. And now we have Impossible Burger and Beyond Meat as examples of fake meat, and fake milk is just recently introduced by Bill Gates, the bio milk. And the first fake fat is actually out. It's now called cultured oil. So the plan is, by replacing these animal foods with patented lab-made alternatives, the globalists will have unprecedented power and control over our health. So all of these fake foods, you know, the worst type of food you can eat is ultra-processed. Not just processed, but ultra-processed. And all of these fake foods are ultra-processed, full of synthetic chemicals. So, as I mentioned, the basic technologies to facilitate the introduction of this food into the food supply was done last century, and even the basic scientific technologies were established last century.
His most important point, I think, to date, to this point in his little presentation, is that the laws have been changed now to allow virtually no testing, no long-term testing for any of these things. These are new chemical compounds, new genetic material. They have no goddamn idea at all what they're going to do to people. No idea.
Mm-hmm.
None. They don't care. They don't give a damn. And if they want to put something in there that will make people sick, who's going to catch that? Nobody. No. Here we go.
The real challenge, though, is to, you know, what is the new technology? That's what I want to talk to you a little bit about today. And that is a term that's called precision fermentation. And this is a new technology that essentially that allows them to make this happen. It's the core fundamental technology. And what is it? It's a form of synthetic biology that has been around for several decades now, at least 20 years. And it uses genetically engineered microorganisms, such as yeast and bacteria, to produce these fake meats and fats and milk, which are some of the absolute most foundational foods that we can eat. Now, in order to pull this off, it's going to require the use of these genetically engineered microorganisms.
I would kindly suggest that I would take a little different approach. I don't think eating butchered meat, drinking cow's milk, are some of the most foundational things that we need to exist on this planet. We don't. Cow's milk's great for little calves. We don't need to eat other animals, other mammals. That's absurd. But that's how even Dr. Mercola looks at this. That's how he thinks. It's a reflex. I'm not knocking him. It's just how people think. These are part of the food pyramid, right? Milk, eggs, beef, salad, whatever. Remember those five foods? And bread. So, wrong. I would disagree. We need to think differently. We don't need meat. We don't need dairy milk. Yeah, it tastes good. I get that. But we don't need it. And that's one of the big lies. Anything, boss, you want to say about that?
Well, I think there's a raging debate about that.
Let's hope.
For another time.
All right. Here we go.
And the new innovation is that there's cult that these bacteria in the yeast and microorganisms are using to grow the food. They're cultivated in very high-tech, sterile, pharmaceutical-grade, brewery-style fermentation tanks. Why do they require that? Because if they don't use this type of advanced technology, it's very easy to contaminate the cultures that are growing it. And once it's contaminated, they can't use it for anything. It just doesn't work. So there's a huge infrastructure investment of many billions of dollars that have been plowed into this technology. And this technology can actually create novel, new biochemical pathways that have never been seen in nature before. And, you know, frequently, that doesn't go too well. Look at what happened with SARS-CoV-2. Now, what they've done is they've completely abandoned, just obliterated the precautionary principle with this thing. And they've replaced it with their own globalist agenda, which is total control and world domination. And what easier way to do it than to take control of the food supply? Now, let me share with you a recent personal experience I've had with precision fermentation. I think it's good because it's highly illustrative. What they've been able to do is produce fake fat to manipulate the narrative to convince very bright and well-respected individuals whose critical thinking skills normally would penetrate their massive veil of lies. So last year, I think it was early last year, it may have been the year before, but somewhere in that time frame, I was approached by a new startup called Zero Acres, and they had a new product which seemed really great. It's called cultured oil. And this is an area that, if any of you have been following me, you know is really near and dear to my heart, because it's being promoted to restaurants as an inexpensive alternative to seed oils, and even in the food industry. And these seed oils typically have 75% linoleic acid. And these new oils have less than 1% linoleic acid. And that's the level that you typically see in beef or ruminants. But it's even lower. It typically has 2 to 3%. So it's
linoleic acid. What's that all about? I don't know much about it. I've seen it, but I don't know what is it?
Linoleic acid is one of the essential fatty acids that you have to get from diet. It's an omega-6. And when it's in its pristine form, it's actually healthy. But the problem is the way foods are processed. The oils are corrupted. They're heated. They're bleached. They're deodorized, and they're very, very inflammatory. And the standard American diet tends to be top heavy in these very inflammatory omega-6 fatty acids. And they come primarily from seeds.
All right. Very good. Here we go.
Pretty sounds really good. If you haven't heard me talk about linoleic acid, definitely go online at my Substack, Take Control of Your Health, or just type it even in a good search engine. You'll find the dangers of this because I believe it's one of the most pernicious toxins that are leading to the chronic epidemic, the disease of chronic degenerative diseases that we're experiencing. I've written extensively about it on my site, and I'm actually currently in the process of writing a review paper on the topic for a peer-reviewed journal. So anyway, that's the background. It came to me, it sounds really, really good. We've got this oil that can replace all these dangerous seed oils. 1% LA is like perfect, except guess what they use to create the cultured oil? Of course, precision fermentation. Sounds really good, doesn't it? Well, there it does, and it's fooled many experts in this field, like Tucker Goodrich, who is really sharp about linoleic acid. But he drank their Kool-Aid, and he, like many others, believes that this persistent fermentation is the best thing since sliced bread, and he's a big promoter of the product. So let me pull back the curtains and tell what they're doing. This fake food industry, they're basically using terms like precision fermentation that everyone is familiar with to deceive us, because the reality is completely diametrically opposed from what the public understands this term to mean. So just like they did the same thing with COVID, they're changing the definition of basic terms and vocabulary. So they're using the term fermentation product and precision to make it sound even better than fermentation. The industry is trying to convince us that it's no different from any other fermented food that we're used to and have been used from time immemorial. Beer, yogurt, kimchi, all healthy foods. But what they fail to disclose is that the most often used microorganism in fake food precision fermentation is E. coli, which is a common bacteria. But here's where it gets dicey. In addition to producing their desired product, in this case, the cultured oil, which is low in linoleic acid, the E. coli is likely spitting out any number of non-targeted metabolites that have completely unknown environmental consequences and potentially very toxic health effects. So this is in stark contrast to traditional fermentations processes, which produce waste products that are actually edible by animals or compostable, and they pose absolutely no biohazard or threat. So it's important to understand that the biowaste from genetically engineered synthetic biology fermentation products, what you have to do with them first is to deactivate them. And then they must be disposed of properly because they can't go into a landfill. So this is a clue that we're dealing with something potentially dangerous. Let me compare first to traditional fermentation, which is in stark contrast to it, because for traditional fermentation produces waste products that are actually edible by animals and actually beneficial for health in many cases. They're compostable and they pose no biohazard. And the biowaste from these genetically engineered synthetic biology fermentation products, on the other hand, they just simply can't go into a landfill. So this is one of the reasons why we just have to be ultra careful in here. And as I said, they facilitated this process last century when they were seeking to introduce, that was in the 70s and the 80s, where they knew they wanted this technology to be passed, and they were really slow and careful, methodical about it. And as a result, the laws are in place now to bypass any safety testing because they've been essentially labeled as equivalent, bioequivalent to real wholesome food.
Okay. There we go. So there's another thing you have to watch for on labels soon: precision fermentation. Watch out for that. I don't quite understand the unfit for landfill issue. Can you put a little light on that for us?
I don't know. I'm guessing that there's going to be vast numbers of genetically modified organisms.
Organisms that are, yeah.
In the production process that mm-hmm. probably shouldn't be just released wantonly into the environment.
Nope. All right. Very good. Okay. Well, there's another page in the massive book called War on Food, War on People. Okay. All right. So let's go back to our ledger of it's just amazing. So what's next here? Expecting father with myocarditis confined
well,
to
I,
home.
What do you want? I thought it would be interesting just to mention that despite the grievous injuries that these injections are inflicting on people, there are people, men and women, still able to conceive, believe
it's
it or
happening.
Not.
Yeah.
So it's not 100% sterility just because someone has had these injections. So I've got a couple reports here. There's a man who is suffering extremely with myocarditis, who is due to have a son or a baby sometime soon, his wife, I should say. We could start with that one. And then there was a woman that some months after she had the shot and been injured, she found herself pregnant and has since delivered the baby.
Don't hear that very often.
Less and less, especially if you've been following Dr. James Thorpe and his consortium of other OBGYN docs, what's happening in that arena. Infertility is, approaching epidemic levels now. Stillbirths.
I think we're there. 75% of women who are injected during pregnancy lose the child.
And I guess in some of these fertility clinics, even though they're not very vocal about it, they're able to generate the embryos in vitro, but by day five, it's not uncommon for those embryos to not be viable anymore. They can't survive long enough to get them implanted. So there's, defects both with the eggs and the sperm.
Got it. Yeah. Well, we're in big trouble here.
We are.
Humankind.
There's no question.
Humankind. Yeah, it's not looking good. I don't like sounding negative, but I think we're sounding realistic here. These are facts, and they're not pleasant. And I think this year is going to be very difficult. Next year will be equally as bad. We will see. We will see. All right, what's next? Go ahead.
All right, let's start with, I guess we could start with this woman in the myocarditis group. Back in August, she made this post, and she said, so I'm 9 months post-vaccine in my perimyocarditis diagnosis, and I just found out that I am pregnant with my third child. All my EKGs, ECGs, and echoes have turned out normal, but the MRI from March found septal bounce and mild LGE in the apex of my heart. My doctor and cardiologist is certain that my body is strong enough to carry out the pregnancy and childbirth, but a part of me is anxious. Anyone here who has carried out a pregnancy with this condition, and how did it turn out?
It's another young woman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Appears to be.
And for the most part, there wasn't anybody, but, lots of well wishes. One person says, I don't have any advice, but I'm holding you and the sweet baby in my thoughts. And she says, thank you. That means a lot. And this next comment is rather interesting. I pray this is a blessing. Congratulations. There is research to show that a baby shares stem cells with its mother while in utero. These stem cells go on to heal any part of the mother that is unwell. So your baby may help heal your heart. Now that would be awesome. You can read more here. If it were me, I would request a C-section so you can avoid straining your heart in labor or during the heavy work of birth. So yes, there it is possible. I mean, this is documented now that when a mother is carrying a fetus, it does release stem cells that enter her bloodstream and will heal damaged organs. Pretty amazing.
That is a little nice appreciated ray of light. Interesting. Hope it turns out to be correct. All right, the next piece on this, same woman.
And she posted this, I think it was last week. So she, go ahead, give the update.
So as some of you know, I was diagnosed with myopericarditis November 21st with prolonged troponin. Elevation. She got an O in there instead of an I. T-R-O.
Yeah, troponin. Sorry. Troponin.
All right. Troponin elevation and apical scarring. That's part of her heart. Last summer, I was shocked to discover that I was pregnant with my third child. I was still in pain every day and in colchicine treatment for the inflammation. After some good talks with cardiologists and some highly skilled OBGYNs, we decided to keep the baby. He was born Friday, 24th of March, and he is so fine and big and healthy with a birth weight of 4,135 grams and measuring 54 centimeters. And my heart feels fine, even though I have had COVID during pregnancy and gave birth with a terrible influenza infection. Jeez, my heart actually feels better than before the pregnancy. I did have a lot of palpitations in late pregnancy, and I am not trying to encourage anyone to choose to do the same as I did, but I know that some of you want to get starting on Project Baby, but are afraid to do so. And to you, I want to say that there is hope and there is a way. Never mind my tired face in this picture. The flu still got me pretty hard. So she's fighting other things, but she took care of that baby and got it delivered.
Yeah.
The human body is sometimes absolutely incredible.
Yeah, really. So, and then we have this person, Bob.
Which one
who
are
writes,
we reading here?
Expecting father. He says, my life is hell. My heart has pounded 24/7 for 18 months. It's worse than ever. My numbness has returned after months of it being subdued. I don't want to do this anymore. I have a kid on the way, and it scares me badly.
Now think about that. Here's a father-to-be and his wife, and he's frightened all the time. No longer can you have a child in most cases and look forward to raising that child relatively unhindered in a reasonable society. I mean, add all the other things that are going on up, and it's pretty daunting, pretty tough. He's scared, and he admits it. Understood.
Okay. I guess we're back to shedding, maybe? Let's see. I'm going back to the 5th of April.
I remember the 5th of April.
It was only 2 days ago.
Only yesterday. It was the day before yesterday. Okay, shedding. We got a whole lot of shedding here.
Oh, let's see.
Shedding from eating out? Shedding.
Sure.
All right. Hi, everyone. I'm not sure if anyone has suggested this before. I experience severe shedding symptoms after eating in cafes and restaurants. I always sit outdoors as far away from others as possible and keep my visit short. I am now suspecting my symptoms are coming more from the food than the customers. When you think about it, the kitchen staff are handling the food. They are breathing all over it while they prepare and cook it. Feedback would be appreciated. I was just talking about that a week or two ago. It's exactly this problem. Go ahead, read the next one.
Well, it's a big question mark. Is it possible? I would think so, but let's also consider that I think people are accumulating a certain level of spikes in their body with each exposure, because when the spike attaches to a receptor, and don't forget, there's 20 different receptors that they know, they've identified.
Not just H2. Not just
H2, not just this nicotinic acetylcholine receptor, that's why everybody's taking nicotine, thinking they're going to outsmart the spike. No, it'll just find another receptor. It's got many to choose from. So if you're accumulating it and it's docking onto these receptors, sometimes the binding is so tight that it's not going to leave. So it may be an issue where if you keep accumulating more and more spike and you're still dealing with the other ones that are now attached to receptors and affecting you that way, then It's cumulative.
It'll tear them out, too.
In some cases, yes. Someone replies.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is one of the reasons we stopped eating out in restaurants and sitting outside on the terrace. We live in a country and a region where the majority is injected with at least one kill shot. Preparing our food with their bare hands, some don't even use gloves here, breathing, sweating, coughing, etc. Nope. My home-cooked meals are 1,000 times better anyways, so we stay at home as much as possible, or we take food with us and sit at the beach.
Yeah. Well, these are really important things to think about. Some of you might say, well, if they heat the food up to, you know, boiling or whatever, and they're getting it hot, that the spike's going to dissipate and fall apart. The mRNA will be torn apart as well. We don't know. Here's what we do know. Anyone preparing food is exhaling on it. Anyone preparing food could conceivably be sweating on it. Anyone preparing food without gloves is certainly exuding moisture from their skin onto the food that you're about to eat. And I'm not trying to harm restaurants at all. I think everybody in the kitchen, frankly, should be wearing gloves, you know, plastic disposable gloves, and I would like to see them wearing a mask. And there should also be an ozone air purifier in the kitchen as well. That would give customers some peace of mind if they knew what they were dealing with. But I don't know that. Now, the last restaurant.
Yeah, you know, instead of all these,
they were wearing gloves at least. Go ahead.
These ridiculous plastic barriers that they had up during the whole scamdemic. I mean, what? Yeah. The sensible thing to do would have been to put, you know, a good air filtration system in there with either UVC or UV or ozone, something, and that would have cut down on the infectious particles.
Just buy it. It's a business expense. Put it in the kitchen on a shelf and let it clean the air, okay?
Mm.
No big deal. Seems like it ought to be part of the local public health code now.
Well, this was never about health, though.
Never. People will never confront this properly. So it's up to you. I don't know about heat. Do we know about heat and spike? If you fry something or bring it up to boil or heat it up somehow, what's the temperature before spike begins to dissipate? We need to find that.
No, I think it degrades it. I think it degrades it enough where it's not going to be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we the only thing we do know is when it was exposed to UV light, which would normally inactivate an infectious virus or bacteria. The amyloidogenic peptides were not disrupted by the UV, which, I mean, that's characteristic of you know, a protein that has those properties.
Interesting.
But we don't know.
No, we don't. A vat of soup, for example. The store I go in has four or five soups. You know, somebody comes in and brings them in. They put them in a hot, it's a hot table, small, and they have them warm. Are these soups safe? Are they warm enough to have, you know, removed a lot of toxicity, potentially, from these shots, from people who might be exuding on them? I don't know. I just don't know.
I think you're probably okay with something that's well cooked.
Yeah.
I would have hesitations though about maybe a pizza where somebody's kneading the dough with their bare hands.
No. I agree. Well said. Yeah. Buy a frozen. Those are all machine-made pizzas anyway, like the Amy's frozen vegetarian pizza. Put your own toppings on it. You can do it. Make your own. But you go and buy one that's actually, as Erica correctly points out, being handmade or hand-tossed, whatever they do with it, spin it, you know, bare hands. Well, no, not for me. Not in this day and age. Things have changed. All right, very good. Let's wrap it up. We're late. Thank you.
Okay.
And as always, talk soon.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
We'll be right back. Hold on.